Shit, that's her guy.
Wait, is he blind?
He's lost his sight in Iraq or something.
That's kind of fucked up to rob a blind guy, isn't it?
Just because he's blind don't mean he's a fucking saint, bro.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus Don't Breathe movie retrospective series.
Who's there?
Hosted by Jacob.
Now, I don't know who he is, but I know who he's not.
Arnie.
You're a bad man. A man who's done terrible things.
And Stuart.
Who are they?
I don't know.
This episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
You tell me what God would allow this.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Now, you're gonna see what I see.
Today, we're discussing Don't Breathe, starring Jane Levy, Dylan Minnette, Daniel Zavato, and Stephen Lang, directed by Fede Alvarez. This is the Now Playing co-host who everybody told in his high school years was going to go blind, Arnie.
And Stuart.
And this is Jacob, the co-host who hasn't wanted to breathe in public for the last year and a half.
No kidding. We're doing this building up to Don't Breathe 2. I have to go to a theater. I'm like, that title couldn't be more apt. Can I wear scuba gear?
Yeah, that feels like put on your mask and don't breathe. That's the greeting you get now.
How long is the film? I've been practicing pearl diving, and I think I can go 4 minutes and 23 seconds. So as long as I just skip the trailers and run in, maybe I'll just see the ending and call it a day. But yes, ironic title, but a grabber for our silver level donors. Thank you for joining us on our new, very loose series where we look at the home invasion genre in much the same way that we did with Purge, only we're combining a few different properties.
Yeah, you have talked about on our main feed, this is one of your favorite genres, Straw Dogs we did over there, and here we're hitting one of my favorite home invasion films.
I have rarely missed any of these. I think I've seen them all in theaters. So Don't Breathe 2 I would be seeing anyway, even if we weren't covering it. I saw Don't Breathe back in 2016 in theaters. Strangers I saw in theaters. The sequel I saw in theaters. You're Next I saw in theaters. Again, this is a sweet spot for me, I think, because it's the part of the horror genre where you can feel like it could happen to you. Witches, demons, ghosts, maybe you don't believe in that stuff. But anyone can believe that they can have their life broken into, they can be held at gunpoint, that people in masks are just outside wanting to come in.
All right, let's see how deep you go. Did you see Knock Knock?
No, but it didn't go to theaters.
Okay.
And I believe that was done by Eli Roth, and that's kind of a turnoff.
I was there opening weekend for Don't Breathe because the concept looked great. I kept forgetting the title, though, because the same month the movie Lights Out came out, it's like, which one looked good again? Was it Lights Out? No, it was Don't Breathe.
In fact, I remember having a conversation with you and Marjorie where you were talking about, I was talking about Lights Out, and it took us about 10 minutes before we realized we saw different movies. Like, it's funny how that all works out. But yeah, a big hit. This movie made $90 million in the U.S. late summer 2016. Sure, it had a good run on streaming and home viewing platforms as well. Good return on a $10 million budget. But it's been 5 years. It's been a while since I've thought about it. And so, yeah, I saw it back in the day. I remembered a turkey baster. I remembered someone being dragged down the street. And I couldn't have told you anything else.
Those are about my memories of it, too. That turkey baster, we'll talk about it. But that is, like, you say don't breathe. That's the psychological test. I'm going to say turkey baster. That's the word association there.
Sure.
I did not see this one in theaters, but I remember you guys talking about it. Somehow, this one just didn't come up on my radar. I never saw a trailer for it. So as soon as it was available for home viewing, I went and watched it. But yeah, I missed out on it, seeing it in theaters.
And I watched it a couple times since theaters. I bought it on iTunes digital and watched it when it was a new release at home. And I think I watched it Halloween 2019 or something like that, just looking for good horror movies to revisit. And because I've seen it, yeah, probably 3 times before this, I remembered most everything that I was coming into. But I was looking forward to it. The biggest shock for me was that it has been 5 years. It's like, where did that time go? I know one of those years was like a black hole year, but still, it does not feel like this movie's 5 years old. It's a long time to get to the sequel.
Yeah, this has got to have a low budget. It's set in a dilapidated Detroit home. Like, it couldn't cost that much to make. If it makes $90 million, like, you rush out a sequel, right?
Yeah, you'd think you'd knock it out fast, but keep in mind, Fede Alvarez is the co-screenwriter, the director of this movie. We keep covering him. He is for donors only, apparently. When we covered Evil Dead, his previous film, that was a Silver Level series.
I mean, we did him this year, just a few months ago.
Right, yeah. Gold Level, this past summer, he did The Girl in the Spider's Web. He had moved on to what I guess he thought was trading up a bigger franchise. Certainly the books sold well, but a fraction of the people that saw Don't Breathe ended up seeing Lisbeth Salander's Spiderweb movie.
Yeah, so he's not directing Don't Breathe 2, but yes, with this film, we've covered his entire oeuvre as a director.
Right. And the gimmick of this one, as a fan of the whole home invasion genre, what made this one unique was the twist that it's going to take. Normally, I'm the person inside trying to board up the doors, cover the windows, hope they don't find their way into the chimney. And here, they're going to say that's the villain. What would normally be the victim, some blind, disabled old man who is hiding in a dilapidated house, he's the one they ought to be afraid of. Our sympathies are with the burglars, with the people breaking in.
Yeah, it's a great little twist on the genre, something I was not prepared for when I watched this. All I knew was it's about a blind guy, so like we're going to do stuff in the dark. And that was kind of the gimmick. I did not know, yeah, the twist where it's the home invaders that are going to be the victims now.
Yeah, you don't want to breathe because he can hear you. We will find out he is, you know, like almost superpowered in the idea that like he's, what, Daredevil or something? Like,
yeah, did they use his DNA to make those Quiet Place aliens?
You know, you talk about that being the twist, but when I saw the trailers, my thought was, this isn't really all that original. I mean, you see home invasion films. Did you see the 2009 The Collector?
Nope.
That didn't quite look like home invasion to me, but
it's the exact same thing. A burglar goes into a house to rob it, and instead of being this blind guy, it's basically he's robbing Jigsaw. So I already kind of had seen this concept by the time this movie came out. But I knew this film was Fede Alvarez. Nobody seems to hold love for that Evil Dead film, but I'll still say I like that remake quite a bit.
Yeah, it was solid. Really? Nobody loves it?
Nobody even talks about it. It's just forgotten.
Well, that's the curse of remakes. Yeah, remakes just never play. It's always a loser's game. If you remake a quote-unquote classic, you're just treading water.
There are a few that escape that rule, but yeah, when people talk Evil Dead, I don't think it helped that Ash versus Evil Dead became a TV series after Fede's film, so that it just really helped drive the nail in the coffin of that remake.
Fede's film is better, I'm just going to say.
Agreed, 100% agreed. But here, I was excited to see him as director again in what looked like a fun horror film, fall of 2016. You get August, September, October. I'm an easy lay for horror, and this one brought me in. But I still think that they took inspiration from The Collector and The Collection.
Or, I mean, again, ideas get recycled. I'm sure there's probably hundreds of movies about, yeah, people thought they could pull one over on someone and surprise. I mean, there was a whole exploitation genre of men that think they can sexually assault a woman and she turns out to be some avenging mama. It's, yeah, it's a trope. But again, specifically thinking about home invasion. Again, I don't associate The Collector with home invasion. To me, when we're talking about this genre, we're talking about making the location a character, and usually it bringing in a moral quandary in which no one is innocent, and sexual assault is usually on the table too, because that's part of the invasion. That's part of the assault. Those are the elements that I think are in play that were set out by Straw Dogs. Arnie, why don't you give them the plot for Don't Breathe? We'll get into this one.
A robbery spree is taking place in Detroit. Alex, played by Dylan Minnette, is the adult son of a man who runs a home security company. Aside, these are adults, right? I mean, I couldn't quite peg the age they were supposed to be. I'm thinking early 20s.
That's how I took it.
I know one of the characters is talking about going to college.
I heard that line, but they seem a little old for it. Were they supposed to be in high school?
I think that maybe a gap year, you know, like we just finished high school.
Yeah, if you're going to get up and move to California, I think you got to be an adult to do that.
Yeah.
Unless they're teenage runaways.
Yeah, I'm going to say 1920.
They're all still living with their parents, so.
Emerging adults.
Well, Alex is pressured by his friends Money, played by Daniel Zavato, and Money's girlfriend Rocky, played by Jen Levy, to steal security codes from his father, and the trio burgle the homes. While Alex gets a cut of the profits, he's also doing this to help Rocky, on whom he's crushing hard. Rocky needs the money to get herself and her little sister a way to move away from Detroit, and away from their abusive parents. The two girls dream of going to California. Money is going also, and Rocky tries to convince Alex to come along. Money sees a quick way to hit this financial goal when he's told of a man who won a big settlement when his daughter was killed in a car accident. The man supposedly has the hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash in his home. The man's a bit of a shut-in, and he has a crazy amount of home security, including bars on the windows, padlocks on the doors, a security system run by Alex's dad, and a mean-ass dog. But the man is blind, so the three break in with the man home. For extra protection, Money brings a gun. The blind man wakes up hearing noise of the break-in, and since the man is played by Stephen Lang, you know he may be blind, but he's far from helpless. The blind man is ex-military, and when he gets his hands on Money, the young robber can't break the blind man's grip. The blind man shoots and kills Money with Money's own gun. Alex and Rocky are trapped in the house and hunted by the blind man and his dog, but they make their way downstairs, where they find the blind man's secret. He kidnapped the driver who killed his daughter and kept the driver as a hostage in his basement. Alex and Rocky release the woman, but she's shot and killed during the escape. The blind man catches Rocky and reveals the kidnapped woman was pregnant with the blind man's child. He wanted a replacement for his daughter. But now that that woman is dead, he ties Rocky up and prepares to artificially inseminate her with a turkey baster. Alex comes to her rescue, hitting the blind man from behind. A game of cat and mouse ensues in the house, and eventually the blind man shoots and kills Alex, but Rocky makes it to the door. She's chased by the dog, but escapes. As Alex and her young sister prepare to board a train to California, they see the blind man on the news. The report says he was robbed, but he killed the two robbers. No mention was made of Rocky or the blind man's pen in his basement. But Rocky and her sister head west as credits roll.
And as we start, they have an opening grabber here. This is an image I've never forgotten, but I question whether it gave too much away. Should we really see that the killer gets Rocky and drags her down the middle of a suburban street, leaving a blood trail in the morning light?
I've seen this movie several times, and every time I saw it, I thought this is him capturing the woman in his basement. I mean, there's no close-ups of Jane Levy. I'm not used to Jane Levy being blonde, but you barely see the girl. The focus is the man. It's a drone shot from the sky. Without the close-up, what I thought we were seeing was when he was kidnapping that girl that we're going to find in the basement later. But no, you were completely right, Stuart. This is a flash forward. This is Jane Levy, and it is Jane Levy being dragged by Stephen Lang.
Okay.
Yeah, my memory was that it was Cindy, the girl who killed the blind man's daughter, but watching it this time, I'm like, oh no, that's obviously Rocky. Like, those shots are the same. Like, the blood trails are the same. Like, I didn't zoom in to see if that was the actress Jane Levy, but yeah, I'm pretty confident that that is Rocky we're seeing. That is a flash forward.
It's why I focus on her, because when we jump ahead to the three burglars, it's arguable who the main character is. On some level, Alex might seem like the more likely, wholesome person that you'd want to focus on, the more innocent person. She is got more questionable morals.
I thought for sure when I saw this in theaters that Alex was the final girl. And I say final girl just because that's what you always call them, even if it's Jesse in Nightmare 2 or some other guy. But
yeah.
I thought it was going to be Alex as the final girl. If I had known that was Jane Levy in the first shot, I would have immediately known she would be the final girl.
Has to be, yeah.
You say, does this give away too much? Again, the first time I watched this, I just knew it was about a blind guy that's going to go after people trying to rob his home. I didn't know that he was actually going to be the villain or anything like that. But Yeah, you're going to spend a lot of time with Rocky, Alex, and Money here. And it does feel weird that you're going to spend so much time with the invaders. So, yeah, I think if you're savvy, this might give something away. But when I saw this, I'm like, oh, okay, that's something that will come up later and get explained. I'm not sure what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, again, maybe you miss it. Maybe it doesn't register for you. Maybe you just focus on what a brutal grabber of a shot. And boy, yeah. When we meet that guy, we know that those burglars don't stand a chance. It actually colored my perspective so much that in coming back to this, my memory was that this was her dead, that she actually didn't make it out of the movie, that everyone that tries to break in dies because she's not going to be a part of the movie next week.
No.
But more on that later.
Yes. But yeah, Jane Levy, an actress who I liked. I talked about her when we reviewed Evil Dead back in 2013. She was doing the sitcom Suburgatory.
I remember she had a bad time on the set of Evil Dead. Like, she was making comments like, I never want to do this again.
And she didn't want to do this again. And yet, she ended up on the Castle Rock TV show.
She did?
Yeah.
I watched that. I can't visualize who she was. She was not a focus of either season. That when I think about what I remember from those two seasons, it ain't her. But okay.
And we saw her in Monster Trucks. I liked her then.
Yes. Who could forget?
And she just had a TV show canceled, Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. I don't know if either of you saw it.
Nope.
The musical show. Yeah.
Yep. I watched every episode. The first season was really solid. The second season kind of fell apart. Did I like the show? Do I just think Levy's a fun actress to watch on screen? I don't know. Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist just became habitual background watching. But I didn't know she was in this film when I came to see it. And so when the scene started, all right, I didn't even remember who she was. I saw this in the theater with Marjorie. I'm like, who is that? And she goes, Suburgatory. I'm like, oh yeah, her.
Yeah, I didn't notice it being the same actress that Fede had worked with in Evil Dead. And normally when I see Jane Levy, she seems like a discount Emma Stone. She seems to be perky, someone you do want in musicals and comedies and what have you. She's playing against type here as one of three burglars that is making mincemeat of some yuppie apartment.
I understand wanting to rob a place, but money confuses me. He's like pissing on the place and breaking everything.
You don't leave DNA evidence behind. I think he's jerking off. Like, there's solid DNA evidence to... And look, money, he's been in prison before. Like, that guy's been arrested. Like, they have his DNA on file.
Yeah, he's got a real Jared Leto Panic Room vibe. Like, I was thinking about Panic Room a lot watching this movie. The camera work has got a similar kind of dramatic quality to it. But he's the one that's easily marked as dead meat because, yeah, he's affected African-American look with the cornrows and is trying to be all street and yet clearly is not as hard as he thinks he is. And is, yeah, while they're getting items, luxury items they can resell, repurpose, you know, what they're doing is ethically wrong, but they at least know that they can get some good out of it. He just wants to break things. He just wants to masturbate. He thinks it's fun to ruin these people's homes.
I thought ruining the stuff was just part of the guise that the house was broken into, because we're going to find out Alex's dad works for this security company and he's able to steal all the codes and keys and everything to get into these homes. So I thought they were just trying to make it look like, oh, it was broken into to throw off the cops. But again, don't leave DNA behind. Bad idea.
Although, again, in this world where everything seems like it's been broken into, even when it hasn't.
It is Detroit.
I do not feel like the cops are going to put in much effort. And in fact, the fact that a man can be working for a security team and not know his own son is the burglar that he's trying to catch lets you know how lax the law enforcement is in Detroit 2016.
Yeah, and again, like Panic Room, I was thinking about that film also because how they had on their team Forrest Whitaker, who knew the security systems. Here you've got the kid, his dad owns the security systems. You would think if they'd done very many of these, somebody would be asking the security system, can you check your logs? When was it last activated? When was it last deactivated? You mean it was stopped when nobody was home and then started 30 seconds before the window broke? I mean, there are questions that could be asked.
Only an IT person would ask them, but okay.
Did I mention I actually taught classes in installing home security systems?
I believe it. I endorsed them without having taken them. It sounds like you really thought about something that went right over me.
But they do drop a line that helps, is that they never steal more than $10,000 worth, because then it's a felony. And they're not going to run DNA tests on petty larceny, misdemeanor burglary. I can see why the cops wouldn't spend too big of a time investigating that.
Yeah, for this viewing, obviously I'm watching it at home on DVD. They did have a feature of deleted scenes. I didn't do all the extras, but I wanted to see what got left out. And there is a little bit more about Alex and his dad in that. The irony is, Alex seems wholesome. He wants to be a lawyer. I mean, he's talking about being good enough to go to law school, but dad doesn't make enough money. I guess maybe his grades aren't good enough to get in on scholarship. And so he's being forced to actually become a law enforcer, either join the police team or join his dad at the security. He's at a real compromise about which direction he's going to go in his life. And I think he's probably only doing any of this because he's got a crush on a girl, right? Like, he wouldn't break into anybody's house if it didn't involve Rocky asking him to.
No.
Oh, you know he was hanging out with Rocky, who was hanging out with Money, and it was all Money's idea. And yeah, he got pressured into it because I like that Rocky girl, so okay.
I feel so bad for Alex in this movie, because even Money's going to call it is just stay in that friend zone where you are. And it is a little bit painful because you get to see Rocky here saying, why don't you come to California with Money and me and my sister? And poor Alex. I mean, this guy, she has to know he's into her. And yet inviting him to go to California to not be with him for the rest of your life romantically is a really hard ask.
I don't think she wants him to come to California. I really, when we see in the car, I'm just going to call it out there. She's using him. She's not really into this guy. She doesn't ever want him. She does need him because he knows the security codes. They can't do what they're doing without it. And she's robbing. She's got an ethical reason to do this. We will seek her home life. Her mom is messed up with some neo-Nazi guy that has no problem putting swastika tattoos on his face. He's doing drugs. She's got to get her younger sister out of that environment. They talk about California. I'm not sure that's going to be utopia, but they know they need to get out of Detroit. And so all of this money, the reason why we aren't to hate Rocky is because all of this money is going to go save an innocent child.
And they do this all in shorthand, but we do get a monologue from Rocky talking about how when she was young, her mother used to lock her in the trunk and basically abuse her. So it's not just that you have disinterested neo-Nazi parents, but that they actually are physically abusive too. You've got to get the little girl out.
And you call that shorthand. I call it Chekhov's ladybug. Like,
yeah,
that's where it feels like, guys, this is more than just a horror thriller. Like, we got some depth to it. And I don't know if it totally works as a character moment, but they go for it.
It does not work as a character moment, but you need something. This is a B movie, so I'm not going to hold it up to A movie problems.
Yes, of course.
It's a dumb reason, and we could get all hung up about, should we really like a character who has these morals? Eh. It's a B-movie. They're moving fast. These are our characters. They're doing nefarious things. She's got her reasons. And Alex is, yeah, kind of the more identifiable one. It will hurt more that he doesn't make it to the end of the film.
I have to say, it hurts me to hear you say you think she's using him the whole time. Because if that's the case, I hate her. I believe that she really is friends with this guy. I believe she does want somebody else she knows to go with her to California. I don't think she thinks Money is a long-term person to be around her and her baby sister. But if she is using him, then all of his sacrifices that he does are just so pathetic. And if I didn't believe in this friendship, I would not recommend this movie. I believe in this friendship.
Oh, I don't. And some of that does come from the deleted scenes. They wisely cut a scene where before they find out about the score that's going to be the rest of this movie, she tries to take a waitress's tip. And they have a whole ethical debate about who's it right to steal from. He makes his justifications about how when they rob the houses, it ultimately only hurts the bankers. And since they're rich assholes, no one really gets hurt. She tries to make the equivalency that the owner of this restaurant gets 80% of the tips and he's an asshole, plus the waitress is an asshole. Anyway, she can't do it. In the end, we just see that she is someone that is again, she takes what she wants. There's another scene, too, later in the movie I'll talk about. She kisses him only when she needs to convince him. And I just, again, I get from the performance, I get from her disinterest, I get from the times that she engages with him that she has a use for him. She probably does like him as a friend.
Yeah, I took him as friends, but not... He might be interested, but I never thought she was.
Oh, yeah. He needs to get away from her. The victory we would like to see, the happy ending would be him standing by his principles, and when money comes back and says, I've got the ultimate score that's going to put us all over the top, saying, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to rob from a blind vet.
But you got to rob from the blind vet. He's got cash. There's nothing to fence. Like, those Rolexes, those aren't worth anything in real life.
Yeah, they have one scene with their fence, and Money's really mad that the fence takes 40%, and the fence makes the excellent point. If you want money, steal money. There's this address, 1837 Buena Vista Street. Go there. That's where the money is. Now, how he knows that? I would not assume because someone got a settlement because their daughter got run over that they'd keep it in cash inside their house.
No, that is the stupidest conceit of this movie, is that this blind man can do so much except open a checking account.
Right, yeah.
He can't see the checks.
They have Braille.
I know.
I guess you're to take it that he's so closed off from the world, so distrustful, so paranoid, that his entire world is within the confines of this house. Again, it's a stretch. It's a B-movie. I'm not going to ask the same thing I would if this were an A-list stellar David Fincher movie. It doesn't hold up to the logic and the reasoning.
I agree with that more or less. I treat this as a B film, but I would like to know things like, how does this fence know about that money? Like, why doesn't he try to get it? Did money promise him 40% if he does get that $300,000? Like, that feels like a weird thing to just give away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought for sure that he was getting a cut of this for giving up that information, but it's not said. But I do want to just put out there, this is a horror movie thriller. This is low budget, but can we stop kneecapping it by just going, well, it's a B movie, so we'll let it go. I think that this movie is doing things much more solid than a lot of quote unquote A movie, 100 million plus budget films we've discussed. I think we're getting really good performances from these three characters. Obviously, Stuart and I are seeing different performances, but I'm liking the camera work and I'm liking the atmosphere of this film. And to deride it as a B movie makes me think that you guys would find this on the shelf next to Blackula, and I just don't think so.
No, I like B movies. That's a compliment. To be a solid B movie, I would love to, if I ever made a film, for it to be a solid B film. Like, that's a category that I like. So I say that it's just, it's not going to go for anything more. Like, again, that Ladybug, if that's your attempt to go for some deep character work, I'm not buying it, but it's a solid B film. To me, that is not a criticism.
Just to drill into the origins of the word, a B picture is, in drive lingo speak, the movie that wasn't bringing people to the picture. You got your A-list, and that's the draw, and everyone drives and goes to see it. And then after the movie's over, you run your B picture, and it's usually kind of whatever. It just doesn't have the same cachet. It's not as popular. It doesn't have the millions you talk about. It has nothing to do with one being higher quality than the other. It's that one operates much more on a lower, grimier, indie level.
I mean, this film is more about the high concept than characters.
Yes.
And to me, that's a B picture.
Right. That's totally it. This is an exercise. This is a cardio workout. You will be put through the ringers to get your adrenaline up. It's not really about rich themes. It's not really about, I think without wanting to disparage this movie, it's just down and dirty. It just wants to get in, get out, scare you, thrill you, and move on. I'm in no way saying that this is a movie of lower quality.
Okay, it came off that way. It was very backhanded compliments being given.
Well, that said, I will say this is not one of my favorite home invasion movies for lots of reasons, including the fact that giant, huge holes in logic that don't make sense. Straw Dogs, I'm going to think a lot about why the characters do what they do. Here, let's just get on to it. And they do. I'm surprised how fast it is that they're sitting outside the house, casing the joint, sizing up their target.
It totally shocked me that you said that there were deleted scenes, because this thing is like 87 minutes long. It moves very fast. It's not a long film. Like, yeah, it gets right to it.
Yeah, and I appreciate that too. You know, I mean, these characters are thin, but they're sufficient. And I think they just got good actors to bring what feels like depth to underwritten characters. But yeah, we're at the house. We're going to see this guy is blind. It's the first time they're going to intentionally go into a home with somebody there.
Where would you be if you didn't know the hook of this movie? I'm assuming you knew that this blind guy, who's nameless, I think they just call him the blind man in the credits, that he is going to be, and I guess that opening shot told you, he's going to be scary. But if you didn't have that opening shot, and you didn't see the trailers for this movie, if you came in 5 minutes late, would you feel bad for this guy? That they are targeting sight impaired. He obviously has this scary dog because he needs a seeing eye dog. He lives in a neighborhood where no one's around and no cops are going to come.
His daughter's dead. If it weren't for the trailers, yeah, I would think that they are picking on a man who has had nothing but misfortune in his life. He lost his sight. He lost his daughter. Now he's going to lose his money. Yeah, these would seem like very bad people. Unfortunately, what got me into theaters was the trailer where I knew the twist.
And see, I didn't know the twist. I knew this was, again, that B-movie gimmick that we're going to be running around in the dark because it's about a home invasion with a blind man who could get around, but the criminals can't. Yes, I see that opening where he's dragging a body, but I figure, well, he's protecting his home. That's what this is going to be about. It's when you find out what he's got in the basement that the movie really turns around.
I agree. I don't think that in watching this movie, I don't know that I was ever on Stephen Lang's side, but at the same time, I didn't feel like he deserved what he was going to get from these burglars until we know how he's responded to his grief. And even that, again, that's what I like about home invasions, that ultimately your morals get compromised, that we can't cite Dustin Hoffman as the hero. Nobody comes out clean in the end. The lines between good and bad are blurred just as much as the lines between exterior and interior are blurred. It's just, that's part of what I enjoy about the genre.
I guess I will cite that Jane Levy has a limit to her acting capabilities in that I can never think of her as being evil and ruthless. I know that's, you know, if you put somebody else in that place.
Right. I'm wondering that if it was a different actress, you would have concluded she's the femme fatale.
I mostly watch her in comedy. And here, I feel that she just doesn't have enough darkness in her to make me think she's picking on a blind person. And if you'd brought somebody in with a little bit more edge to them, if you'd brought in, say, an Amber Heard, I think I could have gone with it more.
Why does Amber Heard have edge?
You hear what she did to Johnny Depp?
I've seen her in movies where she plays kind of a bad bitch, you know, and I believe it.
Like Aquaman?
No, there she's just a bad.
But my associations with her are very limited. It's the Saint and Aquaman. So I get your point. There are bad girls. There are Angelina Jolies. There are characters that tell you, you know, up front, you're paying for the idea that they're the femme fatale that screws everyone over. And that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And Jane Levy ain't it.
No.
She doesn't mean anything to me. So going into this, I didn't go, wow, they've really changed her screen persona. She's believable and likable enough because, again, they've given her this little sister that makes all of her bad behaviors worth it.
I just think that I never feel this group is bad because the only really bad one seems to be money.
Yeah, you always want a character that you really want to die, and usually you take them out first, and then it becomes more of a Sophie's Choice of, like, who can be saved, and yeah, what will it mean for them to pick up the knife, the gun, whatever, and fight back?
Yeah, and so because two-thirds of this crew is very sympathetic to me, I just never feel sorry for the blind guy. That could have been something that was played up much better, but then, you know, I probably wouldn't have gone to theaters if they hadn't revealed the twist either, so.
Right, yeah, for marketing reasons, oftentimes the thing you most want to protect has to get blown to hook people in. And so I don't think we ever have, my point is, we just never have any sympathy for Stephen Lang, but we should. We should right here in this moment. He's more scary because he has a barking dog that's really aggressive, but I think that playing him as a sad, lonely man who has been hurt by tragedy, not of his own making, would be worth taking a moment to consider.
Yeah, that's something I noticed watching it this second time, is how obvious it is that the blind man is the bad guy in this film. We spend so much time with these burglars at the beginning, setting them up, and this blind guy, yeah, it's him and his scary dog, and we never really get to know him except for that tragedy with his daughter.
Right. We know what they know, which is not a whole lot. There's a whole lot of money. Maybe it's in the house. I think Rocky is even like, would he have the cash? Money? What are you? What is this, just another one of your dumb plans? You always feel like money is probably coming up with these stupid ideas like chlorobombs, where you can turn like bottled water into some knockout gas or something. We know that ain't going to work.
And it doesn't.
Yeah, I think that it's supposed to be like chlorine, and I thought they were going to poison the guy if they weren't careful. Because, you know, if you mix ammonia and chlorine, you create poison. That's what I thought he was setting loose.
They should be so lucky that they kill the man instead of being killed by the man.
Yeah.
But yeah, it starts out well. They seem to kind of almost know what they're doing when they're breaking in at 2 a.m. It's kind of funny because they're like, well, the lights are off. I'm like, well, he's blind. That may not mean he's asleep. But yeah, you could go ahead and drug the dog. And there are little hints to indicate that there's things amiss about this house.
Yeah, you talk about home invasion films having the home be a character, and I feel like they set that up during this initial break-in. Like, they go to the front door because Alex is supposed to have the keys to the deadbolts, but he only has one key, and the blind man has put four locks on there. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's going to come back. They're going to have to get through that door somehow at some point.
Yeah, and it is Rocky who has to go in. She's the one who can break in through the bathroom window, the only one who could fit in, and then she opens the door to let the others come on in. And is it smart to take off your shoes? My one thought was, they are called sneakers for a reason.
Yeah, you keep those on so you could run out of there. Again, don't leave evidence behind. DNA, shoes, like, don't. I mean, guys, don't rob stuff. That's bad. But if you're going to, like, be smart about it.
The more you know.
Well, it's easy to judge when we're an audience member watching people we know that are fated to be outmatched. Every decision is like, oh, you're setting yourself up. But if you truly believed that this was a meek old man who was blind and you had a gun and you had the upper hand because it's 2 a.m. and no one is going to come to this man's help, he has no family, he has no neighbors, you just would have confidence. And it's just funny to watch Money, particularly the way that he just releases that gas and is just like, oh yeah, it's over, he's knocked out, and like starts talking loudly, starts banging on like hinges on doors and padlocks, like, oh yeah, I don't have to worry about being discovered. He's dumb about it.
And yet Stephen Lang has a really imposing physical presence. I know we saw that scene in the beginning of him dragging the person, and we saw him briefly walking the dog, but even lying in bed watching home videos of his dead daughter.
Listening to them.
Yeah, that's true. The TV was turned away from the bed. But he is a imposing presence. He is large. He is muscular. He looks tough. Again, if you want me to have complete sympathy, cast this role with, like, a loser, you know? Find somebody pathetic, like Will Forte. Then I'm going to feel bad for him. But here, you know that they're in, even again, without the trailer, you know, and the opening scene, you know they're in for trouble.
Yeah, and you talk about that moving camera, like Panic Room, Stuart, like we get a lot of that tells us this guy is dangerous. Like there's this room with a tool, not a tool shed, but like a board with tools on it. And like they zoom in on that hammer. And then when we go into the bedroom, we're going to have that camera go underneath the bed and we're going to see he's got a gun under there. Like we're being told this guy is dangerous.
This is the funniest thing is in the commentary, Fede Alvarez and Stephen Lang and the writer are all like, oh, we're so happy we were able to make this movie with no CGI. And then we get to things talking about these camera work, like going through the floor. Oh, yeah, well, we use CGI there and there and there. It's like, okay.
Yeah. I know what they mean, though. Again, what they want to be complimented for, and what they should be, the DP is Pedro Luque, and he did an amazing trick. I don't know if you guys saw the Spanish language home invasion movie. It was called The Silent House.
No, but I'll admit you go fucking deep.
No, it has a really good gimmick. The whole thing is shot in one take. And so you have a 90-minute take in which the camera is moving around and choreographed in a way that you see a break-in and a woman alone fighting off the killers. I mean, imagine if you screw up on the 40-minute mark. Like, you got to go and do it all over again. They remade it. It's actually got remade with Elizabeth Olsen. I didn't see that version. And to be quite honest, it wasn't a great movie, but it was a great gimmick. And I do feel like this cinematographer learned a lot about how to tell us things in sweeping single camera takes that don't use a lot of computer trickery. They use it to finesse and to make pretty, but ultimately, yeah, it's about storytelling. And this is very economical, very exciting. We're not supposed to breathe, but I'm hyperventilating with the way this camera is rushing around.
As an aside, that movie, was it really filmed in one shot? Or yeah. Did they do editing tricks so that you couldn't tell?
No, it is one shot. I swear to God, there is one shot to that movie.
Because, you know, first of all, most memory cards won't even hold enough. And second of all, I caught the moment in Spice Girls Wannabe video where they cut two takes together. So once that magic was ruined for me, I don't trust any long takes.
Spice Girls are the ones that ruined that for you?
What good is truth if the Spice Girls are going to lie to me?
Yeah. Okay?
I can't believe that.
But yes, I do like the camera work going on here. I like the visuals of this. I got to give Fede Alvarez credit because even Spider's Web, a movie I did not like, looked good. And I think he's got a good visual style from the three films. And this is probably one of the three I like the look of the best and has the best camera work.
But similar to Fincher, I mean, you do feel like, I don't know if they said in any of the bonus materials, but you do feel like they studied Panic Room and they thought about setting up ideas and guns under beds and just some of the visual information is set up in similar ways to Fincher with less ambition and money.
I have a feeling somebody would have gotten their tongue cut out if they had said something like that. No, this is all, we were coming back from Comic-Con, we had an idea. You know, they're not admitting to homages.
Okay, fair enough. Again, doesn't hurt the movie that it is taking from things that were done previously. They're doing their own thing. And yeah, pretty much right at the act turn where you would want it to be happening, Blind Man is awake, standing in the doorway, wanting to know who is there and how many of them are there.
And it should be said that there's only, two of them at this point. Alex has left because we found out Money brought a gun, and Alex is not down for that, so he's taking off.
Again, more reason to like Alex, that, you know, yes, he is capable of breaking in, he is of shifting morality, but he is staying in Detroit because he wants to help his dad, and there are things he's willing to do and things he's willing not to do, and felonies are one thing he's not going to do.
And again, it is like Panic Room, the moment when Forrest Whitaker wanted out.
Yeah, I think we called it out with Alex. Like, he's always calculating, like, okay, you can't steal more than this because then it's a felony. And yeah, a gun, now it's armed robbery. That's just, he's very well versed in the law. I can see why he might be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not there when Blind Man is basically, yeah, trying to use his superpowers. He's trying to hear everything that's going on. He hears that pistol being cocked. He knows that Money has got a gun on him. Hold up his hands, don't shoot, and then jump the guy, because you know that you can take him.
He doesn't really jump the guy so much as lumber towards him slowly. Money just can't shoot a person. This is, you know, Money, as you said, is a bit of a poser, trying to act street. Never shot a person, not ready to shoot a person right now, not ready to shoot a blind man. If he had, movie over, but because he doesn't pull the trigger, I mean, Stephen Lang just lumbers towards him like the mummy from the old Universal Pictures movies and grabs him.
But Money don't snitch. Like, there is honor amongst these thieves. He's going to say it's just him in the house. He's not going to squeal on Rocky.
And Rocky is very good at muffling her screams, because as soon as he gives up that information, then Blind Man takes his gun and blows his head off. And that would be hard to witness in close range and not breathe or make a whimper.
And that's what brings Alex back, is hearing that shot, too. He hasn't gone all the way out yet. He's still in the yard.
Right. They have some cat and mouse games. In fact, most of this movie is about ducking in and out of rooms. He will be coming in just as Stephen Lang is going to the door and making sure that it's padlocked, and a lot of near misses, a lot of ships passing in the night as they duck into the bathroom. And again, all their ways out are suddenly boarded up. And yay, they're together. Alex has no competition anymore. Rocky is available. She'll probably date him if he'll agree to help her get this money out of this safe that she now has seen opened, because Blind Man wanted to make sure they hadn't already stolen from him, she was able to watch him punch in the coat.
And this, again, is one of those logical things. Like, do safes really, like, flash the combination as you close them? Like, that doesn't seem great, but that's how she gets the code. She's able to see it for a brief second.
They sold it to the blind man cheap. He never knew.
I mean, we'll find out that this guy does use the same password for everything, which, bad idea in real life, but I understand it. You're blind. You don't want to have to memorize a bunch of numbers.
He's got good hearing. He doesn't have good memory.
It is odd how they did turn him into Daredevil. I mean, this guy, he listens, which I understand. I mean, they say when you lose one sense, your others become more heightened. It's not, you know, you don't become superpowered, but you're paying more attention to the others. You know, you're using hearing in a different way. But this guy has super smell. He's like sniffing in rooms.
Well, no, it's he specifically like smells someone's feet. Like those shoes are laying there in the kitchen. I'm guessing Money's the one with smelly feet. He just looks dirty and smelly.
We blame Money for everything. Yeah. It's just all terrible. There's no, like, there's the one character that's not morally gray. He's completely black. He's completely evil. And we're glad he's dead.
And he's got smelly feet. And so the blind man knows.
Yeah, you stinky footed fool. Get your corpse out of here. And what's interesting is Blind Man would normally, if he were a good character, here's your first insight if you still thought this was an innocent. He doesn't go and call the cops and say there's been a break-in. His first instinct is, oh, I better go hide the body in the trash bags. That is not what an innocent person would do.
No.
Well, because he committed murder so brazenly, I mean, I never suspected he had a secret. He shot Money when he didn't have to.
He's got that huge padlock on the basement door. That's a warning.
Yeah, there's reasons to think he's got a secret life. Now, I defy anyone to think of what the secret is. I did not anticipate that there was a woman in the basement. But yes, you definitely feel like this is an ultra-private person who is not doing things that a victim in... I mean, the first thing you do in home invasion is run to the phone and find out they cut the line, right? Like, that's... what you do, call the cops, defer to the authorities. But he's never thinking, I want the cops to come here.
Yeah, I always took him as still in defensive mode the first time I watched this movie.
They make a point, though, that that's why Alex left, that if they brought a gun into his house, he has the legal right to kill them. He's not in the wrong here.
Yeah, agreed. But just because there is a stand your ground law doesn't mean you have to pull the trigger.
Yeah, again, this guy's got nothing to worry about right now about what happened on the second floor. He's got to worry about what happened in the basement. And that's, again, a secret they're going to tease for another 15 minutes. First, we got to believe that, yeah, Alex has a chance with this girl, and they have more money than they thought. They thought it was going to be $300,000. It looks like $1 million in this safe. Do we know from where?
I assumed it was from the settlement, but I got so many questions about the timeline. Like, how long ago did his daughter die? Like, long enough for court proceedings to happen and some kind of settlement to happen? And like,
yet short enough that it's been less than 9 months since he kidnapped the woman.
Yeah. Like, did he wait a while to kidnap the girl? I don't know. I got questions.
I did do some scanning of like rooms to try and get some information. One thing worth pointing out, when we see his daughter in the backyard in that video, the video is from May 4th, 1998.
I did notice that too, yeah.
She's about 5 years old. I figure she probably would have to still be in his care, right? To be run over. Like, she was a minor when that happened.
When they find the newspaper clipping, I paused it. The daughter died at 17.
Okay. So that would be, again, we don't know exactly how old she was, but let's say that she was six. Let's say she was seven, just so it's easy to do. 2008 was when he lost her. It's been 8 years.
Yeah, and the driver was 18 at the time of the accident. How old do you think Cindy is?
She could be 8 years older.
She looks like early 20s. Yeah. Yeah, we'll find out he's an Iraq war veteran. I guess there's two Iraq wars now, so we don't know. I assumed he's from the first one because he's an older gentleman. But yeah, trying to piece together, where's the wife? Yeah, all of this.
Probably she died in 2010 is the only thing that I can put together. And so we're 3 or 4, 5 years beyond her death.
Okay, yeah, because I heard that the daughter was killed in a car accident, but I thought the daughter might have been driving.
Right.
not that she was at fault, but you don't say car accident for one car being involved. You say car accident for two, otherwise it's hit by a car. So
there was a clumsy internet search where explicitly the headline is six-figure sum given out to military vet from rich family. So
where'd the seventh figure come from is a good question. Why has this guy got over a million?
Mm-hmm.
They never say it is a million. They say it's closer to a million. So 900,000, still six figures.
I guess what I'm trying to ask is, should we infer that he's done anything worse than what he's going to reveal that he did in this movie? Is he a mercenary? Has he killed other people for money reasons? Maybe determined in the sequel, but something I'm thinking about.
Yeah, I was just going to say, maybe that sequel will answer that, because it's weird they're making him look like a good guy in that trailer.
You could even make the weird moral logic that in this world of pain and suffering, he's doing everything that he can to fulfill a hole that was created by tragedy, but maybe he's not a tragic figure. Maybe he is a bad dude. Maybe he did get the rest of the million through nefarious means, something that might be fun to find out.
Yeah, in the commentary, the three, again, Fede Alvarez, Roto Sayagas, who is the co-writer, and Stephen Lang. Those were the three there. They didn't bring in Jane Levy. They didn't bring in any of the dead meat characters. They brought in the three who, if they were making a sequel, which they didn't know when they recorded the commentary, would be coming back. They said that they just saw this guy as a person who had suffered a lot of tragedy. He lost his eyesight. He lost his daughter. Where's his wife? Did he lose his wife? They didn't talk about, oh, this guy's a mercenary killer for hire or anything. They wanted us to feel some level of sympathy for him and perhaps even compassion for as far as he goes to at least understand why it is. Now, if in the sequel they decide to change it up and he was killer for hire, okay, but they didn't have that thought when making this one.
I never had that thought watching this. To me, he is another tragic figure, like these people caught in poverty and abuse with their mother and all that. For him, you know, with the death of his daughter, it seems like he lost his faith. A lot of talk about how there's no God and everything's a bad joke. Like, I took him as a tragic figure, but he's going to go to extreme means, which I cannot agree with.
Right. And again, this movie, if it were standalone, we would never even get a name. We would only be able to understand him through what he had lost. As they expand the sequel, I think they're going to have to fill in some of these blanks. I think that they are going to have to give backstories. And so, again, I don't know if I'm going down a wrong trail or not, but it's funny to think about how bad he might be as we watch these people try to escape him. And best jump scare in the entire movie, you know, they finally decided the only way out is through that storm door. They got to get to the basement. They're moving towards the door and bam, it flies open and blind man is coming through to bag up the body. Great jump.
The dog gets me a couple times more than that, but that is a really good one, especially in theaters with the bass and the silence and everything going on. That one did get a jump out of me there. And anytime he's in the room, this movie does a great job of keeping that tension, just holding that note of tension as the cameras swing around the two people and they have to kind of dance with Alex or Rocky, just trying to be so quiet and stay out of the eye line, even though the guy can't see.
Right.
But now they're in a trap. It's a mouse trap. They just need to get out. They have their money. All they have to do is find a way out of a locked house.
And that becomes harder to do once they know they're not the only ones. That as they're fumbling around in the basement looking for that storm door, they meet Cindy.
That was when the floor fell out from under me in the theaters. I just could not believe that he had a captive. The movie takes a left turn at that moment. Got me. Did not see this coming.
I think most films would have left this closer to the third act. This feels more halfway through the film because there's going to be yet another twist. Because at this point, upon my first watching, I'm like, oh, okay, so he's kidnapped the girl that killed his daughter. Just some weird revenge thing going on. I didn't think he was trying to breed a new daughter is what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
that's going to be a big shock.
Yeah, I thought he just kept that woman. I didn't even initially, you know, when you see the woman, I'm like, he captured a fake daughter. Then you find out it's the one who killed his daughter. I'm like, okay.
I did think this was a surrogate daughter. Like, I'll kidnap you. You took my daughter away. So now you got to live down here and be my daughter. I thought that's the direction it was going.
So many Lifetime movies about this, but maybe not so grim.
My first thought was Jigsaw that he got this woman down here to torture her. When you find her, she's got this band around her face that reminds me a little bit at first of like a Jigsaw skin trap. There's a wire going into her back. It's a backpack, but it made me think of how Jigsaw would tie it into flesh.
The blind man's even going to quote Jigsaw more or less, like, Jigsaw, I never killed anyone. I just gave them a choice. They decided they lived or died. Like, he's going to say something very similar. I never forced myself on anyone. No, you're still guilty.
Yeah.
The blind man has more ethics than we're willing to give him credit for when we find this out. When we find this out, yes, the presumption is he wanted revenge and he is gleefully torturing the person that killed his daughter. And so, obviously, Rocky is going to have some sympathy. She's suddenly going to be like, I'm not leaving you here. That she sees herself in this woman. You've done some bad things, sure, but you deserve to be free, just like I do. And so, I'm going to be your ladybug. We're going to get the keys. They're in the vault that has the same combination, fortunately. We can pop off your locks, make it out of the storm door, except, well, blind man is waiting.
Forget it. Alex has it right here. Leave. Call the cops. Help her that way. Don't stay in the house.
But then there's no money.
Yes. This is why she is not a good character, Arnie.
Rocky is ultimately kind of selfish. He wants to get out of there. Yeah.
This is why you have to recognize that in the end, she's not about protecting Alex's life or anything else. It's all about that money. She is the femme fatale.
No. But she has the money in hand and decides to stay to help Cindy.
Because she sees Cindy in herself. Yeah, she, again, for the reasons I already established, absolutely. But she's not going to part that money.
No.
I'm not saying she doesn't have compassion. I'm saying that in the end, she will sacrifice anyone to get that money.
Except Cindy. She could have made it out with the money.
I disagree with that assessment. There was no way of getting out, that he would be waiting when the storm door opened, no matter who was coming with them. But more to the point, I definitely think at this point we are supposed to, yeah, realize that maybe she is that girl that's getting dragged at the beginning. But Cindy ain't going to get very far. She is shot through the neck and bleeds out.
Which, I don't understand, like, why doesn't she have the same powers Alex does? Because, wow, he gets shot a lot in this film. I don't understand how Alex stays alive so long.
Yeah.
But he's the one that opens that storm door. And yeah, the blind man's there. He starts firing. I think Alex at least gets grazed. But yeah, Cindy is going to get the kill shot.
It hits his ear or something.
Yeah, that's what it looked like.
But yeah, she gets it in the jaw. I don't know if that's enough to go down and be dead immediately. But that's what we're going with here is that, yes, honestly, it becomes almost comedic how much Alex endures in this film.
Again, I really think that we aren't to ask logical questions. This is a workout routine, get you huffing and puffing, and don't worry about how invulnerable this character is. It's kind of absurd.
It's because there's so few people in the movie. You can't kill him early because you want to have people to help each other and to talk to each other.
No, you could have it just be girl versus guy, but I think the trick is Alvarez is trying to get you to think Alex is that final character, that Alex, again, you're seeing a different Rocky than I am. I'm thinking here's somebody that's got some character flaws and will probably die for them. Alex is the one that seems the most pure. You keep him around because you want to give the audience false hope.
Oh, yeah. And that was me. I thought till the end, Alex was surviving.
Yeah, he gets shot so many times and never dies. Why wouldn't he?
He may even come back, but not in this next movie. He's not in the credits anyway.
Yeah, this is where we get, I think, the big don't breathe moment. Like, if the concept is about being stuck in a house with a blind guy who doesn't need lights or anything, you know, we see him, he flips that breaker, turns off all the lights in this basement. Alex and Rocky got to wander around in the dark while it doesn't bother the blind man. We'll see him. He's got little markers throughout the basement that he's feeling for. And what is weird, though, is it seems like the typical thing would be to do the night vision, like where it's kind of green. But here it's all just black and grays. Like, it still looks like they're using some kind of night cameras. Those pupils are real dilated, real big, because they're trying to see in the dark, but it's not that typical green night vision we're getting throughout this scene.
When I was in theaters, I thought this was amazing and that they had filmed this in absolute darkness. And I was just thinking about putting the actors in there, the way they're feeling their way around made me completely believe that they just shot this with very low light camera. No, this is all post-process stuff. Everybody could see those pupils are contact lenses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but very effective.
Yes.
Yeah, I buy it.
I completely thought this was 100% blackness when I saw this movie. So a very well done job of playing the scene. It's the highlight of the film right here. This is the best it gets.
You wonder if they considered even doing more of it. It's really, in thinking about the runtime of the movie, couldn't be more than 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah, it's very short.
Right. I feel like this is sort of a throwback to, you know, the Silence of the Lambs kind of ending with, yeah, she's got to get James Gum in the basement. He's got the advantage because in that one, he's got the night vision. Blind Man has the advantage because he doesn't need to see them. He can just hear them. And so we see them like blindly running up to him, almost touching him. And then someone makes a noise in the opposite direction and Blind Man fires and that person recoils. They have fun with that.
And the effect of the gun firing, too, is really nice. It, you know, it flashes white, but you also get just a glimpse of color in the scene. Again, this is really well done. If this movie was made for $1 million instead of $10 million, if this was a Paranormal Activity, this would be the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
But here, you're able to make it a 4-minute showcase.
And I wonder if we won't get more of it next week. I wonder if they feel confident now of like, this is what people really liked. And it's kind of where the score kicks into. There's like this John Carpenter piano theme sounding thing going on. It's the only time I really notice music in this. Sound design, very important, but this is the only time that I think about music. Most of the time, there's this weird dragging sound effect that they call a score.
Yeah, there's a thumping, like the house has a heartbeat a lot of the time. And
yeah,
this was actually really interesting behind the scenes. They did not use a single normal instrument here. They found some guy in, I can't remember if it was Arizona or New Mexico, who builds his own musical instruments out of pipes and tubes in his backyard.
Yeah, Leatherface.
If you watch one of the bonus features, they've run steel wire through tubes and things, and yet you're able to play it like a piano. It was the most impressive thing. Honestly, for all that work, I didn't think the score sounded that unique, but compared to a lot of the modern horror films that just go with a tonal score, but they really put something into giving this a unique musical sound.
But it's all over relatively quickly, and both of our heroes, is that what we're calling them? Alex and Rocky both get out, and we return to color photography. They lock the door, they jam it so that Blind Man can't follow them up. They, you know, made it to the front level of the house, but the dog is woken up. Now they got different problems.
Yeah, they threw it some meat with pills, but much like that little chloro bomb, they're just not enough.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of the problem is they're there much longer than they expected to be.
At this point, certainly, yeah, who knows how much time has passed. And again, the dog is, you know, it's a big one. I wouldn't know how much to drug it, but yeah, it's a pretty scary dog. Chases them up to the second level, far away from the front door where they need to be. And now they're trapped in a bedroom. They've got to move some furniture to block the door so that the dog can't get in. But now where do they go? The windows are barred.
Yeah, and I love the buildup to that because we see Alex jam a crowbar underneath that basement door. So we have like a standoff with the dog, and then you have the blind man like banging on that door, trying to get out. Like, it's a real good, tense, scary moment. Then, yeah, of course, they run upstairs, and now they're going to get stuck in another room.
And Alex, again, this is where he is doing the right thing. He, like, we need to call 911. We need to use that remote that I brought, my scientific equipment that can set off the main alarm, and just bring the authorities here. Because ultimately, wouldn't you rather go to jail than end up like dog food?
Yeah, agreed. You know, you got to cut your losses at a certain point. Instead, Rocky's going to crawl in the cold air return. Can you do this? Is there wood in there? I mean, I know I've seen Die Hard with Bruce Willis crawling through air ducts, but this movie, forgive me for saying this, feels more grounded than Die Hard.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. It's just as absurd. But yeah, it's at this moment, we're just having fun going into every nook and cranny. Again, in home invasions, the house has to matter. The location, exploiting all of its you know, various accoutrements, that's got to be done. Otherwise, you haven't done your job. So, yeah, we haven't been into the crawl spaces yet. What else might she find here? If anything, it's a missed opportunity. We don't really learn anything other than dogs aren't afraid of air vents, and it's going to chase right after her once it gets inside.
They do a Hitchcockian push and pull when she gets in that vent. And,
yeah,
you know, it made me think there would be more danger in it than there is. It just looks like the planks are stretching out in front of her. When the dog starts coming up behind her, I'm thinking this is Alien, right? That's what it's reminding me of.
Yeah, it's where we're actually starting to laugh. I feel like much of this movie is tense and I'm like on the edge of my seat. But here it's actually becoming comical. In a good-natured way. I'm not saying I'm turning on the movie. I'm saying that the movie realizes how bad it's gotten for these characters and how ridiculously over-the-top their circumstance has become.
Yeah, again, the fact that Alex, he's going to get, like, pushed out the window by the dog and fall onto another pane of glass. Like, still alive, though. I don't know how he's still alive. He's just laying there, though. He might be dead. They want us to think he's dead at this point.
Yeah, they can't get out of the house, but they're going to crawl in air vents before they're going to take their chance out a second-story window. Give me the window.
The dog was strong enough to push Alex through a window that also had bars in it, I guess.
Yes. Again, this is what we're expected to believe, is that, yeah, he got shoved out of there. They wouldn't have been able to push their way out without dog power. And so...
Puppy power?
Yeah, we're also meant to think that Blind Man is underneath him. We see a shot of Blind Man stumbling around. Again, Des has no idea that above him, or at least we think he has no idea that above him the glass is breaking and that the person he's looking for is about to fall through.
I don't think he realizes Alex is there until Alex kind of wakes up and starts moving, and that's when the glass starts cracking and tells the Blind Man that someone's there.
Okay, maybe. But yeah, he's certainly in position for an excellent shot once Alex is fully conscious.
Yeah, how is Alex not dead when the Blind Man shoots him, like, point blank?
Oh, it keeps going. I mean, let's get to the real fight. So, because this one still confuses me.
I know! There's garden shears involved and he's still alive.
Help me out with this, because I should have rewound, but I never do because I always think that this is where he dies, but it is not where he dies. He will fall through this glass, he will use the universal thing, it will bring the Blind Man a running, and, okay, he has the mallet, we see some fighting, and Blind Man does or does not take the hedge clippers and stab him in the stomach.
I guess he thought he stabbed him in the stomach because he's blind. He doesn't know that, but...
He ended up stabbing, like, a duffel bag.
Yeah, that which...
No, no. In the room is money. We see money's body trust. So I'm expected to understand that Alex, like, grabbed his friend and put his friend between them so that the Blind Man thought he was stabbing Alex's body, but it was... I mean, that's pretty... MacGyver ain't got nothing on that shit. That is pretty ingenuitous.
Yeah, my reading was he just missed Alex and I guess hit money. I didn't even notice it was money that got stabbed.
I didn't either because, I mean, these two are struggling. When would Alex have had time to grab money's body?
Yeah, I'll use the word so stupid. There's no way that this would happen and it's absolutely ridiculous. But I'm not minding because, again, this movie is fleet. It's keeping me engaged and logic is not its concern. It's not been asking me to think about these... the realism and the horror of the situation. It's just supposed to have been a fun fight.
This is the only fake death that did bug me first time watching it and every time since is the, wait, the shears didn't go in him? That was the only one.
No, it definitely went into a body, but you have to believe that Blind Man is confident that he has killed Alex when in fact he has just re-killed money.
Yeah, you'd think he'd feel for a pulse or something. But you know what? I forget all that because of the next development. Because the Blind Man's going to go back down in the basement. He's going to take Rocky down there with him. And we're going to find out what he's really up to. And it is unforgettable.
Oh, Lord. This scene made me squirm every time I've seen this movie, I'll be honest. It just every time. This is where it really goes. He's telling her, hey, you know what? I'm going to let you go in 9 months. I don't think I believe him.
No, you know what, but the genre always has to go here. Part of the invasion is about being violated, right? Coming into your home or coming into your body, like there's an equivalency to all of that. You have to go there, even though it's uncomfortable. And I feel like all of the most novel, most memorable home invasion movies will take on the idea that the main character gets sexually assaulted or in some way has to confront sexuality.
Should it be, though? I mean, I know that we've talked many times about how rape was more casual in films in the 70s and 80s than today. But in today's climate, in 2016, it was a huge hot button topic when this movie came out. Should this have happened this way, or is it too misogynistic?
It's not misogynistic. Now, you can argue it's too cavalier. That's why it's important that you justify it. To do it on a whim because it's entertaining is gross. To do it because you have a point or because you want to take violation to an extreme, that you have to do it, I mean, I understand the need. Again, I think that the sexual assault in Straw Dogs, highly uncomfortable. Everyone has a right to feel like they wouldn't necessarily want to see that movie, but that movie is what it is because they showed a woman consent to a rape and then have that rape turn. Like, that is a part of the violation, and I think that home invasion is about violation. I don't know how you do it gently. I don't know how you make it. Yeah, I'm trying to see another way out, and I don't.
I think that if you're trying to shock and trying to get a real reaction out of people, you're not going to do it with a pair of garden shears anymore.
Right.
But I understand that there's a lot of issue with this being in film. And at the time of this movie, Jane Levy was asked in a lot of interviews I read, you know, what do you think of this? And she goes, you know, it's something that makes sense for the movie and it's done in a way where it's more implied. Nothing is shown. You know, he cuts her pants open, but you never see anything. The only thing you see is the turkey baster. And when that thing drips, oh my God, it's so gross.
Yeah, context matters, and I think the context here is this is not a stable, normal guy. The movie isn't saying, hey, if someone kills your daughter, even by accident, go rape her and make yourself a new daughter. Like, I don't think they're giving that a pass or trying to make any of this look heroic.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think it's worth questioning whether Fede Alvarez is, in some ways, enjoying this. Because, you know, when we reviewed Girl in the Spider's Web, there was a whole lot of kink in that. There was a whole lot of BDSM, and I feel like this harness routine might have been something that Lisbeth Salander might have done to her in that movie. Like, I feel like this director is very comfortable with it. And whether you are or not, again, I support any audience member that says, I don't want to watch this. I get it. You don't have to. Absolutely not.
Yeah, don't be comfortable with rape. That's a good thing. Like, don't normalize that.
But Jane Levy changed her story. In recent interviews, she said, I'm done with horror. I think it gets a little too rapey for her. That's the word she used, is a little too rapey.
Yeah.
So somewhere between there and now, somehow she had a change of heart. And that's a portion of the reason she didn't return for the sequel.
I fully admit that it's uncomfortable. It's not something that I, quote unquote, like to see in home invasion movies, but I recognize it is a part of the story because you're talking about extreme violation. And this rape, just to take it out of the context of misogyny, can happen to men. If you look at Deliverance, it happens to men. I think that the violation, it just needs to be earned. It needs to be there for a reason. If it's there for just a cheap gag, just a shock, then, yeah, maybe you don't do it. Maybe that's lowers the bar on this. And here, the novel twist is that, yes, this blind man could hurt her in all different kinds of ways, but perhaps the deepest cut comes from a turkey baster. Like, that is the shocker.
No. The shocker is when he's filling the turkey baster and there's hair in it.
Yeah, it is that pubic hair that makes it so memorable for all the wrong reasons. But again, I do feel like they kind of build up where you're like really leaning in. What is going on? He'll pull out a burner and turn it on. Is he going to torture her with that? Put something on there. But then, yeah, when you see that turkey baster and that pubic hair, you know what's going down.
Yeah, he's a gentleman. He's not going to rape you. He's just going to shove something up you. Ugh.
Yeah, and again, I think he believes that. There's an ethic to this man that he believes he's owed this. This is what you owe me. You came into my place, you stole my money, you killed my bride, the woman, or not even his bride, the mother of my child, you killed her.
She was pregnant, yeah.
Yeah, she would not be dead if you hadn't tried to free her, so you owe me this. And yes, maybe the real debate is, would he honor his word of letting her go in 9 months? Is he so crazy that all he really wants is to remain daddy to a child.
I don't think so. I mean, I think he could tell her that to keep her compliant for 9 months, but he knows nobody can get out of there alive.
Nobody has seen the sequel yet, but heavily featured in the trailers is the fact that he does seem to have forged a new relationship with a small little girl.
Yes, I noticed that.
I think that being a father is that important to him. I don't believe that he is a psychopath that gets off in inseminating artificially women captives. I believe that he truly just wants to replicate the little girl that he lost.
I agree, but I think he also is smart enough to know if he lets Rocky go, Rocky's going to the cops, and then his daughter will be taken away from him again.
Well, he goes to a different house. He has a plan in 9 months to be somewhere else. I mean, yeah, you can't stay in that house.
He's got $1 million.
Right, he's got the money. He can relocate.
You see that neighborhood? He could buy up that whole neighborhood with $1 million.
Yeah, exactly. Or buy off the cops, frankly. I mean, you could probably convince the Detroit cops to look the other way here. I don't know. But he won't have the opportunity because Alex is still alive and he's trapped somehow. The dog in the room and come back and they beat the shit out of this blind man. And I think everyone now in the theater is cheering them on. We're happy to see that this pervert has been, has to swallow the turkey baster.
Swallow his own juice, yeah.
Choke it, yes. This is a very satisfying reversal.
Alvarez said he was just gearing up for the argument with Lang about when he decided on set, yeah, you're going to have to swallow the turkey baster. And Lang was just like, no, let's do that. That makes sense.
Yeah, I believe he's game.
Convenient timing for Alex to wake up and get down there, but hey, they've won now. They lock him up, right?
Yeah, this could be the end. It's just enough that they've decided that Alex, he lets Rocky make the choice. I'm going to let you decide whether we call the cops or take the money. I'm deferring to you. You have the power in this situation. You can set what it is. It's enough that she says money, right? Like that in of itself, after all that happened, that she would let this man get away with it. Like kind of a shocker, kind of a moral compromise, kind of what I was talking about, how characters end up in moral quandaries and become lessened by a home invasion. So kind of tragic in and of itself, even before Alex is shot for real this time. We know he's dead because it's slow-mo. Like we see him falling so slow that everyone realizes, okay, they mean it this time.
And Money was killed in slow-mo too. So there you go. If it's not slow motion, it's not dead.
Right. We've learned the trick here is that we now know it is Rocky's the final girl. The front door is open. The blind man is not going to be able to chase after her on the open street, but that dog sure can, and it's going to follow her all the way to the getaway car.
Yeah, we're going to go full Cujo here.
Yeah, the rolling up the window definitely felt familiar.
Yeah, I was certainly thinking Cujo in that, and yeah, she had been locked in enough trunks that she knew how to trap the dog in it, and it made me think you could remake Cujo today better than the old one.
Yeah, they definitely could improve it. But in leashing the dog, she engineers some stuff with a bungee cord and luring him through the trunk. She is able to even get out of this circumstance where the money is outside the car and the killer dog is on her hood. She seems to be, yet again, this could be the end, but we remember now that opening shot. She was never getting away, that she was going to be dragged back into this house. If you had forgotten it in all of this flurry, it now becomes, again, I feel like the ending of this movie is she doesn't get away. It's kind of weird that they have a ladybug redemption moment and that she does. I feel like it's wrong that she gets away.
That is where I'm cracking up. Yeah, we see her in the house and she sees the ladybug and that gives her some kind of inspiration. I don't know. It's very silly to me.
It feels like an alternate ending. Like they had the ending where she just got dragged and the door closes and credits roll.
They needed 5 more minutes for this to be a feature-length film.
No, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like test audiences said, no, we like Rocky and we want her to live.
There was a bit more to the ending, but I did find a copy of like an early draft script and this was the ending in it.
The ladybug.
Yes.
Yeah, it's bad.
Oh, you don't set that ladybug up without having it pay off at the end.
I'm not saying it's what they did. I'm saying it feels like the kind of ending you do that compromises your bleak vision. Like suddenly this becomes pretty silly.
I just, and I could be wrong, I'm just talking off the cuff here, but I do feel like modern, even horror films, like, they tend not to be as nihilistic as the ones we may have grown up on.
Maybe not. I don't know, but I feel like you don't want to run from that instinct. And I don't feel like Rocky has deserved to get away. She got Alex killed. I mean, she did a lot that I feel is, you know, talking about karma. I'm not saying she deserves to be assaulted and killed, but karmically speaking, not getting away feels like the right ending.
See, and I just think she's, because she's trying to save her sister,
yeah,
and because I have a different read on her and Alex than you do, I think she deserves to get away.
Yeah. I think you're not alone. I think most people would like to see, usually we do, we want to see the final girl live. And so, yeah, it's, I guess, meaningful that she uses the universal remote to call the cops, something that Alex wanted to do multiple times that she would not allow, and have them come to the rescue. And yeah, maybe the blind man dies falling down those stairs.
It's his weakness, his super hearing. If you overload him with sound, he has to fall to the ground. He can't hear you anymore.
That's so bullshit.
Yeah, it's a real Daredevil moment.
It is.
Yeah, it's your alarm system. You can set the volume for whatever you want. Like, that's dumb.
Well, it was more dumb when it was a washing machine.
Yeah, it is. Again, the movie is pushing the boundaries of, if not good taste, realism often.
Yeah, what are we supposed to believe happened? So we know Rocky gets away. She's at the bus station with her sister. They're going to California. They see this piece on the news that there was this break-in. Two home invaders were shot. It was this vet. He's this big hero. Again, Stuart, you keep saying it's the police. They're just lazy. And okay, maybe you're right. But like, yeah, they didn't look around the house. They're just like, okay, yeah, break-in. Okay, we're not going to investigate anything else. We're not going to go into the basement. He somehow got out of that basement, I guess, before the cops got there, but he was able to cover everything up. He didn't report the money missing.
Maybe that's his dog's playpen. I lock my dog up with all the sofa cushions at night.
The dog cleaned it all up. It dragged all, like, Money's body and the Cindy's body and dug two holes. Yeah. No, Cindy's under the house. We did see that he has, like, oil that he uses to dissolve the bodies, so...
Yeah, he has, like, pull-away floorboards that he could stick people under. But we do know they found the bodies of Alex and Money because they said there's two home invaders that were shot.
Oh, okay. All right. But, okay, it just looks like he was the victim. And again, if it happens in their house, then you have the right to shoot him dead.
And he didn't report a missing $1 million, so the police aren't looking any further into it. And that definitely feels like the setup for a sequel, or just, again, your typical horror ending. Like, you think Freddy's dead, but he's going to pop up one more time. Here's the fact that this vet is still loose and could be coming for them.
You were more right than you thought, Jacob. This was filmed after Rocky and her sister go to get on the train. You can even see it in some of the trailers. There is a tracking shot of the train station floor, and it ends looking as somebody walks in using a white cane to look around. Like, he is after them on the train was the original filmed ending. Not even on the iTunes extras I have, but that was a filmed ending, and they decided to cut it with the happier ending of they get on the train without him there.
Right. And so what does that mean for the sequel that presumably you would think Jane Levy would be the star of? But if she is, they've hidden that real well and she's not listed in the credits.
Yeah, it doesn't look connected to this at all.
Oh, no, no, no. They can't hide it so well that she and Fede Alvarez had some testy words on Twitter.
Oh, okay. So maybe they even wanted her to come back, but she said, I'm not coming back.
No, she was not asked.
No.
They said there's no place in the plot for it.
Okay.
But Fede Alvarez said, you know, these movies are very hard on her, and she's doing so well in television. She looks happy on television. She never looked happy making my films. And then she came out there and was like, well, I was never asked, but it's very nice for him to tell me where I'm happy. But I wouldn't have done it if asked. So it got a little bit... you know, not too ugly, and they're not famous enough to really get headlines for a couple of Twitter snipes, but that's where they're at. And as I understand it, the sequel's like 10 years after this.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know, going in as spoiler-free as I can be, but the trailers have definitely told me that they're going with a different take, that it isn't the most obvious direction. Whatever his beef is with Rocky, it's not the story of the sequel.
But what do we think of the story of the original? Jacob Stewart. Should you inhale, don't breathe. Jacob.
Yeah, this is a fun little film. Again, it's a thriller. You could call it a horror thriller. I think it's more just a straight thriller, but it's that home invasion thing. And I don't know if fun's the right word, but that's the word I'm going to use because it has everything that I want in this kind of film. It's got a great gimmick with the blind man and being able to just listen and kind of like that same thing with Quiet Place where it's all about sound. Like, they don't play it up as much with this one, but yeah, that's the fun. And running around in the dark where he could get around, but the home invaders can't. Like, this has a real mind-blowing twist. Like, if you haven't seen this, you've been spoiled. But wow, that was quite a thing to see the first time around and have this unfold because it goes places I really was not expecting. Some might say that's in bad taste, but I go with it because they justify the characters enough. Like, you have the blind man. He's got some real sorrow going on in his life. Like, yeah, no one, except maybe money. Maybe he's the black in these kind of gray characters, but there's not a whole lot of black and white going on here. Everyone's kind of not got the most pure of motives, but that's what makes it fun is, like, I'm constantly like, okay, if at first I'm going for the blind man because he seems like a poor victim. Oh, no, here's this reveal. Now I'm switching. Like, that's fun to have in a film where new things are constantly being revealed and you're switching allegiances and all that. Like, I feel like, again, it's a fun movie. It's like a roller coaster ride. Like, for a horror thriller, that's kind of what I want. That's not a criticism. It's not trying to achieve to be some art film. That's fine. They don't all need to be art films. So yeah, this is a fun thriller with a great gimmick. And yeah, recommend this one. Solid film.
Stewart.
Yeah, I think it is the film that David Fincher had been encouraged to make when he was told to make Panic Room. Like, just do something down and dirty on the cheap. Give it a lot of pizzazz and style, but don't spend too much time on it. It's a creative technical exercise. You're going to use the camera to do a 90-minute cardio workout. And yeah, the fun of it is, not all of it is quote-unquote fun, but the fun of it is they take conventions that are long-standing in the home invasion genre and twist them just enough to feel like, wow, that's really novel. I've never seen it where I feel bad for the home invaders. I've, you know, not seen it so that the sexual assault becomes almost a sympathetic father trying to bring back the daughter that was taken from him. Like, they twist things in a way that pull your alliances and sympathies to make them feel like, you know, they're not deep characters, but complicated. Ones that are intriguing and again, maybe even hard to like, but ones that you want to follow for the 90 minutes that this thing goes. But I will say that, yeah, I had a good time, a lot of fun. It doesn't have much aftertaste. I think you could rename it Don't Think. I think ultimately it is a turn your brain off movie. Enjoy it in the moment. Don't ask deep questions. Or maybe all of this will be solved in a sequel that does fill in huge gaping leaps of logic. I don't think they can explain away why Alex has 9 lives and can survive all the shit that he does. Just some of it is just out and out stupid, but all of it is fun. So I'm going to give it a recommend.
3 for 3. I really enjoyed this movie when I saw it in theaters, but I'll agree with you, Stuart. One of the reasons this has no taste is this title. I mean, there's just movies with generic titles have a hard time.
What are you talking about? I could taste that turkey baster.
Thanksgiving will never be the same.
Did you pick the hair out of your teeth after?
I want to. I feel like there's hair in them, yeah.
But I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm just saying I don't think that this one has the legs. I'm curious. I mean, after what Suicide Squad did, I pity every movie that comes out in its box office. You can't even judge how this movie is going to be due based on whatever its box office is when it opens. Ironically, this movie was the first one to kick Suicide Squad out of the first place box office in 2016. But I think that this one is a underseen gem. I mean, I know it made a ton of money, but it doesn't...
It's not underseen, Arnie.
It's not one people talk about.
But what do you want them to go back to? I mean, like, it doesn't have longstanding... You know, Straw Dogs was about the Vietnam War era. You could point to themes. This was... What is there to say other than it got your heart racing?
Yeah, that's all it needs, though, is to have a good amount of suspense and to have characters that are a little bit morally gray so you can have fun thinking through who is the worst in the given situation until you find out exactly how depraved the blind man is. I think this is just really well made. Again, I think it's a really good looking film and a good time. I can give it a wholehearted recommend, but yeah, it's not going to challenge you except for squeamishness with the turkey baster.
Yeah, it's provocative, but I don't think thematically there's a lot that needs to be explained. Let's just leave it at that. There's a sequel. We don't know what it is, but like there's a lot about who the blind man is and where his moral alliances are that could use some splaining.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of people say, oh no, what are you going to do? They're turning the blind man into the good guy for the sequel. I don't think so. I think there's going to be a twist.
I agree. I think the trailer is giving you that impression. I don't think he is going to be a good guy, though.
I think he's a bad guy, and he will be the worst guy again in a situation. But we'll see. I'm very curious to see it. I'm excited to see it. Kind of wish it was streaming. I'm going to have to go breathe in a theater, but I was in theaters this past weekend to see it.
Yep, and thanks for you guys for waiting for it. I know we had to delay it because, you know, we still had to do the conversation and the August patron. Take a little breather. It's always nice to take a little breather between the donation drives, but we're at it now. We're in full gear for the fall and silver level, gold level, platinum level donors. The fun starts now.
So thank you for your support. Thank you for helping keep us on the air. Jacob Stewart, thank you for joining me. And until next time, get out of my house!
Bye-bye, Detroit.
And Ola, California.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing. And we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review.
When are you coming back?
As soon as I can.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
Your lips look sore. That's how you're making your cash out there?
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
You hear me or what?
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
There's nothing a man cannot do once he accepts the fact that there is no God.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
You have to be held accountable.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Yeah, whatever, Judge Judy.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2021, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Fuck it. I'm out.
But no, a fraction of the people that saw Don't Breathe ended up seeing Lisbeth Salander's Spiderweb movie.
Yeah, if we did Chaos Walking, which is a movie, strangely, that came up today in conversation, and I'm like, that movie came out? I didn't even know it came out earlier this year.
That's Fede Alvarez?
You know what? On the Fede Alvarez page, it says it is, and then I click on it, and it says it's Doug Liman. So I think Wiki has an error.
Yeah, it's not him.
Yeah, I didn't think it was him. Yeah, he might have like produced it or written it or something.
Here in notes, Fede Alvarez did all the reshoots for it. So that doesn't count, Wiki.
No.
She ended up on the Castle Rock TV show.
She did?
Yeah.
I watched that. I can't visualize who she was.
Let me double check. Maybe it was a different one. I swear it was Castle Rock. Maybe it was Creepshow.
Well, there's a big difference there. You want to be on Castle Rock. You do not want to be on that shit-ass Creepshow show.
Yeah, she was on Castle Rock. She was on 10 episodes.
Huh. Which season?
Jackie Torrance.
Jackie Torrance.
So got to be related to, you know,
something with The Shining.
She was not a focus of either season. That when I think about what I remember from those two seasons, it ain't her. But okay.
And we saw her in Monster Trucks. I liked her then.
Yes. Who could forget?